welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author, Courtney Mahrez. Her book, Blessed Carlo Acutis, A Saint in Sneakers, published by our friends at Ignatius Press, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. It's a pleasure to meet you after all these years.
Yes, so great to see you.
You've been working for us in the news operation for, what, almost 7 years now?
That's right.
And you're presently stationed in Rome, right?
I am, right at the heart of the church.
For CNA and for EWTN News.
That's correct.
So do you write a regular column? You cover the beat? What do you do?
I cover the daily news out of the Vatican, breaking news, writing about one or two articles every day about covering the Pope, the Vatican, and the global Catholic Church.
So how'd you end up there? You started in the Northwest, you went to Harvard, somehow you ended up in Rome.
That's right. I think that journalism, and Catholic journalism in particular for me, was really this intersection of two of my passions, of current affairs and the Catholic faith. And I just feel so blessed to be a journalist for EWTN, where I literally can have the gospel, the good news, as one of my headlines when I'm reporting on the Pope's Angelus, for example, when he's giving his reflection on Sunday's gospel. So it's really been a joy to report on the Catholic Church. And one of my favorite things is the stories of the saints, as you'll see.
So that's your connection? How did you get kind of attached to this particular story?
This particular story, well, the story of Blessed Carlo Acutis. As a Vatican journalist, I am always following new saints' causes. It's something I'm writing about all the time, and I remember just being struck by the fact that there was this computer coding Italian teenager born in the 1990s who was on his way to being declared a saint in the Catholic Church. And it really struck me. And as I continued to report on it and report on his story, it became clear that people were really excited by Carlo's
excited?
Story.
What? Because it was so different than they expected?
Yeah, I think his story is so new. It's the first time in the nearly 2,000-year history of the Catholic Church that we will have a computer coding saint. The first time we'll have a millennial saint. So he's really the first. He will be the first saint of his generation.
What's amazing is that here he is, a new tech guy, and he actually died right around the time the iPhone came out.
That's
so
right.
So the world we're living in today, 20 years later, is even totally different in many ways than the world he was living in the web, because he was kind of born when the web was born, right?
Exactly. Carlo was born in 1991, so it's the same year as the launch of the World Wide Web, and he lived through this time of just an explosion in technological changes, and it's beautiful to see, you know, how a life of holiness played out amid these great changes in the 1990s and the early 2000s.
Now, there's a quote right in the beginning from Matthew 18, "Whoever humbles himself like this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Did you pick that up?
I did, yeah, and I think that's really, really what Carlo shows the world. You know, he died at the age of 15 years old. Mm-hmm. He didn't have very long on earth, and yet he lived his life completely for God, and he was ready to go at that age. And I think one of the reasons why his life has really resonated with a lot of people is that he shows us what sanctity, what holiness, what heroic virtue can look like in the 21st century.
Is it different than the way people perceive it to be?
It's the same it's always been, but he shows us a path forward in the modern chaos, in prioritizing your relationship with God, the sacraments, these things that the church has always given us throughout the centuries.
But you can be a real person, live in the modern world, and still go strive for sanctity.
Exactly. Right. Carlo shows us you don't have to completely unplug from the world to be a saint, but he really lives out this life of holiness as a layperson.
Mother Angelica always liked the real saints, the ones with, you know, the blemishes and the struggles.
Exactly.
And not the the plaster Paris saints, as if nothing, the butter melted in their mouth kind of a thing.
Pope Francis calls them the saints next door.
Right.
And that's, Carlo Acutis definitely falls under that category.
Right. And we know, we actually know a lot of those people without realizing we do. In the beginning, you talk about the idea of an influencer for God. We hear all about influencers out there. Many of them aren't particularly very good. He was a good one. Who's Ellen Losel?
Yes, so Ellen Losel was someone who I encountered while working for this book. And she was she's a remarkable young woman who was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was in her 20s. And she came to seek out Carlo as an intercessor for her while she was going through chemotherapy and undergoing treatment, because Carlo Acutis himself died of cancer when he was 15 years old. And she said that during her treatments, Carlo came to be a friend. Right. You know, she had this relationship and really encouraged and inspired her with his heroic virtue to approach this great cross that she was enduring. She kind of had him by her side, and
she had a holy card, right?
Yes,
that she really didn't remember that she even had.
Exactly,
right? And he kept popping up.
And he kept popping up. That's exactly what she said. And you often see that with the saints, that they choose us. And she said that Carlo was kind of her constant companion as she went through chemotherapy. And I think, that's where Carlo resonates with people on so many different levels. You have this idea of him being the new tech saint, but also a patron for young people, as well as people undergoing cancer treatments.
Right.
So there really is this depth as well.
How he dealt with that. Similar to we hear stories of with Lords, with Bernadette, all this incredible suffering, but doing it, so peacefully, amazingly.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, that really was Carlo's witness, that he accepted his diagnosis with such serenity that it actually made an impression on the doctors and nurses around him in those last days, this young boy that had so much spiritual maturity. And I think so much of Carlo's holiness kind of was hidden during his life, because it was just his time of prayer before the tabernacle, his deep relationship with God, these one-on-one conversations that he was having with people. He wasn't seeking out any attention for himself throughout his life. But I think in those last days when he was suffering with cancer and enduring this great cross, that you see the depth of his spiritual life kind of come forward. While he was undergoing cancer, he offered his sufferings for the Pope and for the Catholic Church. Right. And Carlo really believed in the power of redemptive suffering.
Right.
And that's a testimony that has inspired many people with your own crosses, whether it's cancer or anything.
Incredible Catholic truth.
Exactly.
That explains so much and that people miss many times. You say in the book here, after researching more about Carlo's life, she saw a new dimension she had not realized before, such as the boy's bravery while suffering from cancer and how he inspired his parents and relatives to return to church, discover a deeper faith in God. Because his parents were kind of marginal Catholics, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. That's something that some people don't realize. They say, a boy who died at 15 is becoming a saint. He must have come from a super Catholic family. But his mother said that His mother had said that she didn't attend Mass really except for weddings and funerals when her son was born. Thankfully, his parents gave him this great gift of baptism and that grace, and he encountered the Catholic faith through other people in his lives. But his mother has testified that Carlo was full of questions. He was a very curious young man, and so he's always peppering his mom with all these different questions about the Catholic faith. And and as someone who wasn't a practicing Catholic, she felt a bit illiterate when faced with all of these questions. And so his mother actually sought out the help of a priest and said, "My son has all these questions about the church, about heaven, about God." And slowly her son's questions became her own questions. And as Carlo's mother learned more about the why behind Catholicism, she had a conversion in her own heart and returned to the sacraments, returned to practicing the faith, and became a great evangelizer herself. And I think that's why she's referred to her son as my little savior, is what she calls Carlo.
Well, he was impacted by two different people in his life, right?
Yes.
Beata.
Beata. Yes.
She from Poland?
She was from Poland, that's right.
So that was the early part of kind of like introducing him really to the more devotional aspects of the faith, right?
That's right. So the Kutas family hired Beata as a nanny when Carlo was very young. And his mother recalls that she arrived at their apartment in Milan with a bag full of holy cards. Mm. So she was enthusiastic for her faith, and she was likely the first person to teach Carlo the basics of the Catholic faith, to bring him to Mass with her and teach him how to pray the rosary. And these were things that he was very drawn to from a young age.
And took him to shrines,
yes,
Lady of the Rosary,
yeah,
et cetera, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And Carlo became, little Carlo, a little boy, he became very fond of these little holy cards from Marian shrines in Poland that she brought to him. And so it just shows the influence that you can have on a young child, you know, by introducing them to the faith at a young age, that they really can soak it in and it can
that's
bear
great fruit. That's why you need those holy reminders
fruit.
Out there in your home and living in it. And that's why grandparents are so important.
Yes.
In inculcating the faith, even if somehow their kids didn't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
They had an opportunity with grandchildren. It was interesting, chapter 5, from Hinduism to Catholicism, I said, I didn't know Carlo was a Hindu, but then I realized it's not his story, it's somebody else's story.
That's right. That's the story of Rajesh Moher, mm-hmm. Who's someone who I got to interview for the book, and it was so inspiring to hear his story because he converted from Hinduism to Catholicism because of Carlo's, because of meeting Carlo. Rajesh came from the island of Mauritius. Mm-hmm. He was from a very Hindu family, from the Brahmin priestly class.
Right. Mm-hmm.
His father was actually a Brahmin priest. And Rajesh had had very little exposure to Christianity until meeting Carlo. Mm-hmm. and Rajesh was hired by the Kutas family as an au pair for their family. And so part of his responsibilities was bringing Carlo to and from school, mm-hmm. in the morning and in the evening.
Right.
And luckily, living in Milan, Carlo's family's apartment was just around the corner from their parish church and his Catholic school. And so Rajesh would walk with Carlo, and Carlo always wanted to stop and pray in, mm-hmm. front of the tabernacle or go to Mass. And he would just sit in the back of the church and watch this little boy praying so reverently, and he was so fascinated by it. But then Carlo took it a step further, because Carlo loved to talk about the things he loved, which was heaven, the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, the Mass,
Eucharistic miracles.
So he was always having these conversations with Rajesh, and Carlo's faith was so contagious.
Right.
And actually, when Carlo was just a young boy, he taught Rajesh how to pray the rosary. Mm-hmm. And just 4 years after meeting Carlo, Rajesh was baptized in the Catholic Church.
As an adult, right.
As an adult.
We said Rajesh observed how young Carlo's behavior changed when he entered a church.
Yes, so we've had many people remark on that, just being struck by the way Carlo prayed, how reverently he prayed. His parents have described it that the tabernacle for little Carlo was like a big magnet. He just wanted to
be. That's what the mother said. Right?
Yes,
that's what she told
exactly.
About, right?
That he just wanted to be in that presence of the Lord. And Carlo himself, told his parents, "Oh, the best time to ask for graces from the Lord is right after consecration." So he really had this firm belief in the real presence. And
where do you think these insights for somebody 15 years old came from?
From the Lord,
right.
And I think from his enthusiasm for the faith. I mean, we know from Carlo's life that one of the tools he turned to learn a lot about the faith and learn more was the internet.
Right,
and
right.
So he would go online and would be searching for information about church teachings or Eucharistic miracles and just reading and following all these things. So he definitely had this enthusiasm.
Now, in the beginning, you talk about as a computer programming millennial on the path to sainthood, Carlo has shown that Apple computers, Spider-Man comics, and Super Mario on Nintendo 64, and my son would agree with this, and a life of heroic virtue, I don't know about that part, but he probably is working on it, are not mutually exclusive. That's an important message for a lot of young people today, right?
Definitely.
As we talked about earlier.
Yeah, Carlos shows us that there's what holiness can look like in our complex digital age. Mm-hmm. I think many Christians are still grappling with, you know, how to live a life of holiness in our brave new world of laptops and cell phones and social mm-hmm. media. And Carlo shows people a path forward in our digital age. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he's really resonated with right. a lot of people, this young saint buried in Nike sneakers who right. liked video games.
Right, absolutely. And you also talk about the fact that when he was, I guess it was in Milan, he actually would go to the Ambrosian Rite. Why did you make that point?
I just think it's important to people to know, because Carlo attended daily Mass, mm-hmm. That this was the rite of the Mass that he was attending, and that's the case across the Archdiocese of Milan.
Right.
And so it was interesting, while I was there researching the book, I was able to attend Ambrosian Rite Masses. They're not too different from the Roman Rite that most of us are familiar with, but I thought people might
the
be curious.
The lectionary is a little different. Or
exactly,
the
yeah.
is a little different,
in those
like
little details about his life.
Right.
Yeah.
You also talk about the fact that he consecrated himself to the Sacred Heart, and that he liked to attend Mass at a Dominican monastery where Leonardo da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper, the fresco, was painted on the wall of that particular monastery, considering during the Olympics this kind of got some notoriety, but that impacted yeah. him too.
Yeah, unfortunately, became. But yeah, for people who were to, you know, if you were to make a pilgrimage mm-hmm. to Milan and go to the Carlo's parish, Santa Maria Secreta, it's where he went to daily Mass. Mm-hmm. You'd also see that just a few blocks away, just a short walk, is this great fresco of mm. the Last Supper that we all know right. from right. images. And so it's just, it really struck me, the proximity of it, especially with the fact that the Eucharist
the
was
to the Eucharist.
So
yeah,
central
absolutely.
In right. Carlo's life.
Absolutely. In a section called Highway to Heaven, you say his catchphrase is, "The Eucharist is my highway to heaven," sums up the centrality of the Eucharist in Carlos's spiritual life.
Yes. The Eucharist is my highway to heaven. That was a phrase that Carlo loved to say, and really is one of his most well-known mm-hmm. phrases. And it really does sum up the centrality and how the Eucharist was the mm-hmm. source and summit of his spiritual life. Shortly after Carlo's first communion, he told his mother, "I always want to be united to Jesus." Mm-hmm. That was really the goal of Carlo's life. And the way he
accomplished. And that's how he saw doing it.
And that's how he saw doing it. The way he saw doing it was by going to Mass as mm-hmm. often as he could.
Right.
And so he was able to walk to Mass with Rajesh mm-hmm. Before and after school. And that's how he was able to attend daily Mass
right.
as an elementary okay. school student and as a high school student.
Carlos' parents remember that he once told them, "Jesus is love, and the more we feed on him, who becomes food and drink for us through the Eucharist, which truly contains his body, blood, soul, and divinity, the more our capacity to love increases." And I think that was a message, obviously, the Eucharistic Congress was trying to get across in the United States this past summer as well. Let me ask you, because you're over there in Italy, how would you compare the kind of focus on the real presence in the Eucharist as you see it throughout Italy, maybe it's different in Rome, versus what you might experience in the States?
Well, I just came from the National Eucharistic mm-hmm. Congress, of which Carlo Acutis was a patron,
right.
and it was incredible to see the great enthusiasm and more than 50,000 people in an NFL stadium all adoring Jesus in the Eucharist together. And it was such an inspiring thing mm-hmm. to be a part of. Unfortunately, we know that the reason that the U.S. bishops put together the Eucharistic revival was because of some alarming statistics mm-hmm. that, you know, so many Catholics were not aware of or did not believe in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. And I think you find something similar over in Italy
okay.
as well. I mean, in Rome, definitely in Rome, also in Milan, we're so blessed to have tabernacles and beautiful Catholic churches, you know, almost on every corner.
Right.
And I think Carlo kind of saw, you know, we have Jesus present right here with us, and his whole life was kind of yelling out, you know, he's here. Yeah. You know, why aren't people lining up to go? Why aren't people coming to go see Jesus in the Eucharist? And Carlo really didn't understand that. He actually asked his mother, like, why is it that people wait in long lines to go to rock concerts or soccer games, but you don't see people lining up to go see the God present here on earth, this miracle that we have with us?
Well, we need more people screaming it out besides him, and maybe some more people inside the church screaming it out and reminding people of that.
Yeah, I think Carlo would have been very happy to see the National Eucharistic Congress, and it was just that, people lining up in an NFL stadium to adore Jesus present in the Eucharist.
What's his connection with Assisi and St. Francis?
Yeah, so the Acutis family ended up getting a kind of a second home, a vacation home, in Assisi, the great medieval hill town, the great city of St. Francis, and Assisi was the place where Carlo felt most alive. Hmm. He loved Assisi. He relished the spiritual nourishment that Assisi provided, mm-hmm. being able to attend Eucharistic adoration and daily masses, praying at the tombs of great saints like St. Francis and St. Clare. And he actually befriended a number of different religious orders there. There was a order of sisters there who actually called upon Carlo to help them with their computer and IT problems that they were having, and he very enthusiastically agreed.
And he was self-taught on the computer, right?
That's
with Tony
right.
and everything
yes.
you talk about in the mm-hmm. book, how he did that. So Carlo always mentioned one miracle in particular, his mother recalls, Lanciano.
Yes, the miracle of Lanciano. So Carlo was convinced that the scientific evidence from Eucharistic miracles could be persuasive mm-hmm. in awakening people to the reality that Jesus is present in the Eucharist and help bring people to Mass. And so that's why Carlo was so interested in Eucharistic miracles. And the 8th century miracle in Lanciano was one that Carlo loved to talk about because of the scientific analysis that had been done on the host. So basically what happened in Lanciano was there was this monk who was having doubts about whether Jesus was present in the Eucharist. And one day morning while he was offering Mass, during the consecration, the host transformed mm-hmm. into flesh, like tissue. And this has been held over the centuries. And as we entered, you know, the modern era, they were able to do different scientific studies on this tissue that has remained intact, you know, over all these centuries. And a doctor found that not only was it human tissue, but that it was cardiac tissue,
tissue of the heart.
Right. And that was something that Carlo loved, because it was this idea of, you know, the sacred heart of Jesus, you know, present and beating for us in the Eucharist and being present there.
Right.
And so that was why he wanted to shout out from the rooftops to let people know.
Now, he also had a strong Marian devotion, didn't he?
That's true. Yeah, he and his family made several pilgrimages to Lourdes, and he had made Marian consecrations. He loved the rosary, was very devoted to the rosary.
Now, when he got sick, did he mm-hmm. ever go to Lourdes to see if he'd be healed?
No, he died so quickly. Okay. Actually, he died within a week after being diagnosed
when they first
cancer.
Started having a temperature and not feeling well, right?
Yeah.
That kind of a thing?
Yeah, it was his second year in high school, and his mother noticed, you know, this red spot in his eye, and he just had a temperature. And what started out as just a normal sick day for Carlo, in which he was on his computer doing homework, praying the rosary, quickly turned out to be clear that it was something much more serious. Mm-hmm. And so his parents brought him to the hospital where he underwent a number of tests, and then the diagnosis came that he had cancer.
Right. Leukemia?
That's exactly right.
I thought this, in the Heroic Virtue Online, that chapter, great line, sadness is looking at oneself, happiness is looking towards God. That's a great message. Too many people taking selfies, getting very depressed.
Yes, it's a great message, especially for not only our young people today, but for anyone who's on social media today. There's so much emphasis on self. And I think the internet, it's important to say, you know, the internet does present us with many temptations, vanity being one of them. And something important to know about Carlo is that he loved the internet and he loved technology and these tools, but he never used it to glorify himself. He wasn't taking selfies and posting them on the internet. He wasn't trying to bring attention to himself. In fact, Carlo had this great phrase that he loved to say, which was, "Non io ma Dio," which means not me, but God. But it's much more catchy in Italian because it rhymes.
Everything is.
Non io, ma Dio.
I thought in high school holiness, Carlo's mother remembers that her son used to like to say, and I thought this was great too, "We are all born as originals, but many die as photocopies."
Yes. I think high school is such a time where young people are under immense pressure to try to fit in, to try to be a cool kid. And Carlo saw this, and he saw that what happens when you kind of go with the cool crowd is you end up becoming a carbon copy of everyone around you. But that's not what God calls you to. God calls each person to be utterly unique in their holiness and what God's called them to and how God's called you to be a saint. Okay. And he embraced that. And Carlo wasn't afraid to stand up for things he believed in, to defend people who were being picked on in high school against bullies, or to have difficult conversations with some of his friends in talking about and calling them to a deeper practice of
their
faith.
Last question, chapter, what Carlo can teach Gen Z? What can he teach them?
There's so much that Carlo can teach us, but I think the great secret of Carlo's life was his life of prayer and seeking out the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. And it really was the sacraments that gave Carlo the grace to approach technology in a healthy way. And these this is available to all of us, attending daily Mass, prayer in front of the tabernacle, confession, the Holy Eucharist. And this is a great testimony that Carlo shares with us.
Right, and it's in this book, Courtney Mares. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Blessed Carlo Acutis, A Saint in Sneakers. He certainly is. Check it out. Published by Ignatius Press. Naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog. EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Worth the read. I'm Doug Keck. This has been Bookmark. We'll see you next time right here. Thanks.